Do you have anything that you want to accomplish in life? I bet you do. Do you know that in addition to things that you need to do, that there are also things you want to avoid doing if you want to accomplish your goal? Yep, you're a smart person. After all, you're here listening to this podcast. Well, today we're going to take a look at three things you do not want to do if you want to succeed at accomplishing your goal. And where are we going to get this information? Well, from none other than the book of Nehemiah. Stay tuned.
If your desire is to become spiritually stronger, emotionally healthier, and relationally smarter, you're at the right place. Speaker and writer Stephanie Smith inspires and equips you to achieve these three key aims. If you are a parent, you'll also learn how to raise empowered kids ready for adulthood. Let's get started.
If you are joining us for the first time, we are walking through the book of Nehemiah. This is a book in the Old Testament in the Bible, and it is an amazing resource on leadership, on goals, and on team management. Now, that might just sound like it only applies to people who are in C-suite positions, but this applies to everyone, because all of us end up having goals in life and we end up needing to work with other people in some respect or another, whether they are employees or they are customers or colleagues. And just like Nehemiah, we normally encounter opposition. Just a quick recap in case you are joining us for the very first time. Nehemiah was a Jewish person who occupied a very high position in King Artaxerxes' cabinet, if you will. He served in the royal palace, and he was in charge of the wine for the king. Now, he was not the grunt who made sure that the king's wine wasn't poisoned by tasting it. No, no, no. This was a high-level official position. Well, he had gotten word that the city of Jerusalem was still in ruins. Jerusalem had been devastated by Nebuchadnezzar some many, many, many years ago. So it wasn't just that Nehemiah was getting that information for the first time. Rather, it was because 13 years earlier, Ezra, a priest, had been trying to lead a rebuilding of the city of Jerusalem and had been shut down. People around Jerusalem who also were subject to the Persian king, Artaxerxes, were not happy to see Jerusalem rebuilt. They had tattled to the king, and the king had said, okay, that's it. You got to stop building. 13 years later, God just burdens Nehemiah's heart about the condition of Jerusalem. And with several acts of bravery after prayer and fasting and seeking to make sure that this wasn't just a temporary desire, but this was a real passion that God had put in his heart, he gets permission to go back and actually begin rebuilding this city, which meant the king reversed his earlier proclamation. Not only does he receive the king's permission to go back and rebuild the city, but the king gives him passageway through the territories, and he also gives him basically a blank purchase order to get whatever timber he needs from the king's forestry department. Well, there are some people around Jerusalem who are not happy about this, and not only does King Artaxerxes give Nehemiah the safe passageway and the purchase order for the timber, but he also sends him back to Jerusalem with military officers and with horsemen. So Nehemiah doesn't just drag into Jerusalem with his sandals worn out and his brow, you know, covered in sweat and dust, having traipsed through this countryside for weeks and months at a time. No, no, no. He arrives in style. And when he arrives, he does not tell anybody why he has come. He just shows up with this impressive military escort in the city of Jerusalem. he settles in before he sets out really on his mission to rebuild the city. What does all of this have to do with you and your goals? Oh, I'm so glad you asked, because it's everything. This is one of the things I love about the Bible, is that when you really sit down to read and study it, you can see application in your own life. Not that we want to look at everything in the Bible and say, oh, it's all written just for me and my needs right now. It serves a much bigger purpose than just me. But in addition to those bigger purposes, we do see application for us personally. Today, as we look at the second chapter of Nehemiah, verses 11 through 16, yep, it's just a few verses once again, but there are three specific things in there that we want to avoid doing if we want to achieve our goals. If we want to achieve the purposes that God has put into our heart, there are some things that we need to avoid doing. It's not that Nehemiah does this and these things, and then we are learning by his failure. Rather, it's that Nehemiah does just the opposite of these things, and we're able to see his success. But what we're going to do today is we're going to flip this, and we're going to look at these things in the context of what not to do if you want to sabotage, or if you want to, what to do if you want to sabotage your goals. These are the three ways that you can sabotage your projects and your passions and your goals. The first is to rely on secondhand information. It's interesting. Just recently, I was at a conference, and this was for home educators. And I was speaking with someone there. They were not there attending the conference because they were a home educator. They were there in a capacity exhibiting a product. And we got to visiting, and I realized this was the first time he had ever been to a conference like this. And he had no real firsthand exposure to home educators. And he's standing there and he's telling me how homeschool students just sit in their desks at home all day long. They never get to go out and go to PE class. They don't learn how to interact with other kids. They're going to grow up and they're not going to know how to say hi to somebody. And I just kind of let him talk for a little while because I'm trying to kind of build a bit of a relationship with him. And I didn't want to just shut him down with every single thing that he said. But inside I'm thinking, you don't have any idea what you're really talking about. And clearly you haven't had the kind of firsthand experience with maybe any at-home educators, much less the wide range and the typical type of home educator. Now, certainly there are homeschooling families who probably operate like that. But in my 25 years of home education, nobody that I knew did, and I had a pretty wide circle of people. And even though we had different styles and a lot of different ways, nobody's kids were sitting at home all day in their desk, not getting to get out and do anything or have any activities. So I let him talk for a while, and then I told him a few things. I shared with him how one of my sons had a scholarship for basketball when he went to college, and he was shocked by that. He was like, they actually have teams? And I said, oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, they just finished the National Homeschool Basketball Tournament in Springfield, Missouri. And he was like, what? And we went on. I said, yeah, there's baseball teams. There's soccer teams. There's all kinds of activities. And that's just in the area of sports. And he was blown away. He had no idea that anything like this existed. And for me, it was a wake-up call, because to me, it was just so ordinary and common that it didn't even register with me that in this day and age that anybody wouldn't even know about that. But the issue was, he didn't run in the kind of circles that gave him firsthand access to the lives of homeschoolers to be able to see what normally goes on, or even what opportunities are out there, even if somebody chooses not to participate in them. And because he didn't have firsthand exposure and information, he made some erroneous conclusions about an entire class of people, entire group of people. And it's easy to look at that and think, oh, well, that doesn't apply to me. But here's the thing that's true for all of us. Whenever we want to set out to accomplish something of significance, and this might be something that's a long-term task. It might be starting a business. It might be starting or participating or getting training to work in a nonprofit. Maybe it's to complete a college degree. Maybe it's just a one-time event, like going to the voting polls or something of that nature, but something that has significance to it. If you want to sabotage yourself with that or your goal, then rely on secondhand information. Don't dig into things and learn for yourself. Instead, just rely on what other people tell you. I wish I could say that what I am seeing in our culture is more and more people getting information for themselves and not just relying on second or tertiary sources, but I don't think I can say that and be intellectually honest. And that's not just something that's happening in one arena or another. And when it comes to politics, it's not something that only happens on one side of the aisle and not the other. It's something that all of us have a tendency towards because basically, really, as human beings, we want to expend the least amount of effort for the greatest result possible. Well, there's a time for that, but not when you are getting ready to launch and start into something of significance. What Nehemiah does is after he gets to Jerusalem, he settles in, and for 3 days, he doesn't tell anybody why he's there. I'm sure he was asked, if not directly, in those kinds of sideways comments or questions or statements where the intention is to draw out information. I would guess that there was buzz going about with people wondering why he had come, but he doesn't tell anybody his reason. There is a time to just be quiet about what's going on in your life. Just because somebody is curious doesn't mean you have an obligation to satisfy their curiosity. And in a culture that has increasingly forgotten that there actually are these things called appropriate boundaries, that's an important item for us to remember. We're not obligated to satisfy someone's curiosity simply because they have something that they want to know. Nehemiah waits until it is dark. He doesn't want anybody knowing what he's doing. Well, actually, a few people, but he doesn't want all of the leadership and all of the townspeople and everybody in the surrounding areas to know what he's doing. Now, this is not because he's being secretive. It is because he's being private. And there is a significant difference between secrecy and privacy. Secrecy is when I am doing something that I know I shouldn't be doing, and I don't want anybody to find out about it. Privacy is when I am keeping something to myself because it's the appropriate thing to do, not because I'm afraid of the consequences if somebody finds out I'm doing wrong. Secrecy has a fear motivation. Privacy has a wisdom motivation. Nehemiah goes out at night and he goes around the walls of Jerusalem, well, what's left of the walls of Jerusalem, and he measures everything. He sees it for himself. He doesn't just send out scouts and say, come back and give me a report. He goes out into the field. He gets his hands dirty. He gets his feet dirty. It's hard work, especially at night when he's having to just go by the light of either a lamp or the stars or whatever. There's certainly not street lights to flip on. And he obtains for himself all the data he needs about this project that he is going to undertake. And as he goes out and he measures from one area to another, he doesn't just measure once or twice and then say, okay, well, from that, I'm going to extrapolate all of the rest of the data that I need. He obtains all of the data that he needs firsthand for himself. Certainly, there are times to delegate collection of information and to work from other people's research. Absolutely, we have to be able to do that. But when you are in the beginning stages of a new project and a new task, you need to have all of the pertinent firsthand information yourself. Don't just rely on what somebody else tells you. Get out and find out for yourself. One of the dangers when people do not do that is that they can end up in a part-to-whole fallacy. A part-to-whole fallacy is when I say, because something is true for this individual, it must be true for everyone in this group. Now, maybe this man that I was referencing a few minutes ago, maybe he had some exposure to a homeschooling family, and that was true for them. The kids just sat at desks all day long. They never got to get out and do anything. They didn't know how to engage socially. Maybe that was true. I'm doubting that he even had that close-up of experience. But even if he did, it was a part-to-whole fallacy then to think that that was true for all homeschoolers. And we live in a culture today in the United States that engages in these part-to-whole fallacies all the time. And it is crippling to us in so many ways as individuals and as a nation. We need to be able to get information for ourselves and not just rely on reports from everybody else. Now, I know we can't all go and get firsthand information ourselves on every last thing. I do live in the real world. I do get that. But as much as you can, get the information for your goal, your project, your significant activity for yourself. The second way that you can sabotage your goal is to invite lots of people to help you in the planning stage. I have read many of John Acuff's books, and I'm a big fan of his work. If you're not, you need to go look him up. It's J-O-N-A-C-U-F-F. He's got some great books and resources available for you. You can find him easily online. One of the things that he talks about is that goals require these four stages. You dream, you plan, you review, and you do. And what happens is that there are certain people that you want to have with you in each of those different stages, but you don't want to have them all with you in all four stages. There are people you want to have in that dream and brainstorming stage who are creative, who are open-minded, who are going to be able to come up with all kinds of ideas and put them on the table. You don't want the people sitting there who are just going to cross their arms and tell you a million reasons why that cannot be done. But when you get to the planning stage, you need to have some of those people there, because otherwise you can go to work and find out your dream kind of ignored some reality, and it's going to end up sabotaging you. What Nehemiah does is he only takes a few men with him when he goes out at night to accomplish this task of assessing what's the totality of what I have to deal with here. He does not take an entire contingent. He doesn't wait until it's daylight and then he goes out with this entourage. He takes a few people with him. Not only does he have a limited inner circle here, but these are trusted people. He trusts that they are going to go out and carry on this activity in an appropriate way. They're not going to go through and be loud and obnoxious and wake everybody up. They're going to be people that he can trust understands the necessity of doing this work in private. A book that I highly recommend for everyone, it's a newer book by Dr. Henry Cloud called Trust, Knowing When to Give It, When to Withhold It, How how to earn it, and how to fix it when it gets broken. And one of the things I appreciate about this book is that he expands our understanding of trust. It's not just about how do I get trust back with someone who has deceived me. Trust is about a much bigger picture than that. So it's not just a matter of how do I trust people to tell them my deepest, darkest, private matters in life. It's also trusting that people have the capacity to complete certain tasks that we need from them. When you are in the planning stage of a new project or a goal that you are working on, you don't need to invite the entire world in. Just have some trusted people in your inner circle that can help you obtain the information that you need in order to set up a strategy. All right, what's the third way that a lot of times we end up sabotaging our goals? We tell everybody about it. Nehemiah does the exact opposite. As a matter of fact, he's so careful with this that in the Bible it records, he lists all of the people he doesn't tell about it. He writes, he didn't tell the Jews, the officials, the priests, the nobles, and the rest who were to do the work. Basically, he didn't tell anybody except these few men that he has invited to be part of his inner circle in the early planning stages. Why is that? If you bring too many people in too early, you are either going to end up with chaos or discouragement. You will end up with chaos because there will be so much information and so many different voices telling you exactly what you need to do that you're not going to be able to sort through all of that. Or you'll end up with discouragement because you'll have so many people telling you why you can't accomplish X. Just limit the people that you tell about and your goal to until it is the appropriate time. It's interesting that modern research seems to indicate that we actually sabotage our likelihood of accomplishing our goals when we tell other people. And this contradicts what we often think or hear, which is that when we let other people know about our goals, then they're going to help hold us accountable. But actually, the research shows that it's just the opposite. It's as if when we talk about our goals, our brain tends to process that in some way as if we've already accomplished something significant towards that goal. And we become less motivated internally because our brain has already kind of registered that we've done something towards that goal when in fact all we've done is talk or yap about it. Now, this doesn't mean that you never get to tell anybody your goal. Nehemiah had, for example, gotten permission from the king, and he did have a few men that went with him, and they knew what was going on. But he didn't go tell everybody. He didn't even just gather all of the leaders initially and talk to them and tell them about his goal. You are much better to just not tell anyone or keep a very small circle of people when you are in those early stages of your goal and make actual progress that you can report on, not things that you're going to talk about that you're going to do in the future. So once you've accomplished some things, absolutely have some people that will celebrate with you what you've actually done, but save the celebrations and the applause for what you're going to do until after you've actually accomplished it. And that's exactly what Nehemiah does. To recap, if you want three ways that you can sabotage your goal, then this is what you need to do. You need to rely on secondhand or even information that's even farther away than secondhand. The second thing you need to do is you need to invite lots of people to come help you in the planning stage. And third, you need to tell everybody about your goal. But if you don't want to sabotage your goals, your desires, your callings, the things that God has put in your heart to do, Well, then follow Nehemiah's example, which he lays out for us in the second chapter of the book that bears his name in the Old Testament, specifically looking at verses 11 through 16. All right, my friend, I bet you have some things that God has laid on your heart to do. Maybe they are new and they are fresh, and maybe they have been laying there dormant for decades. Whatever they are, and whether they're brand new or whether they've been there for a long time, know this. It's never too late to start using your abilities and looking for opportunities to use what God has given you to build up his kingdom, to bring goodness and light into this world. Whether you do that or not really does matter, because you have an impact that is immeasurable, eternal, and irreplaceable.
Thank you for listening. Visit the website, stephaniepresents.com, and sign up for High Impact to join the mission of building spiritually strong, emotionally healthy, and relationally smart women and families. You can also book Stephanie to speak at your event and check out additional resources. Together, we can invite and equip generations to engage fully in God's grand story.